Hi, Gary. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing well, Adrian. How are you?
I am awesome. Super excited to have you on. Thank you so much for your time. I
Thank you.
have been so excited to chat with you about all the amazing things that you're doing, and we will get into that shortly. But for the audience who maybe doesn't know who you are and what you're doing, can you share a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, my name is Gary LeBlanc. I'm CEO of a beverage brand, functional beverage brand called Zero DB. And as importantly, I have an ecosystem around Quiet the Noise. I'm a life engineer, so I wrote a book called Find Your Superhuman. And everything that is about, oh, thank you, Adrian.
I started reading it. I love it. Okay.
So everything about sustainable tactics to live healthier, longer, happier, that's really my sweet spot. So the drinks act as a catalyst to have that conversation.
I love that. Well, we were kind of joking around prior to hitting record. You were kind enough to send me some, which are absolutely phenomenal, I will
Thank
say.
you.
And they definitely helped quiet the noise. And it was such a unique taste. I'm not going to get like really into it, but I really, really love the product. And when I love something, I actually do like to share that.
Oh, thank you.
So that's number one. But number two, I left one in the fridge and I told everybody, don't touch it. People keep saying, whose is this? Whose is this? And I'm like, don't touch it until I, anyways, it's gone, but I love it. So like you said, you've got many different things, I feel, if I'm correct, that sort of speak to mindset, speak to health and wellness, and speak to quieting the noise. Where did that sort of tagline and whole thing come from? I know you've got a story, and I can't wait to hear.
Yeah, I'll tell it a little quicker than usual, but I used to be in corporate and, I did have a quite an accelerated career. I was a vice president for a big alcohol company in my early 30s. And, that's a life of more or less hedonism, right? I had a lot of insecurity, grew up stuttering. It was a long story. So, all this insecurity fueled a lot of this, I don't know, hedonistic behavior, nothing nefarious, just, really focus on just having a good time. And a friend of mine got diagnosed with lymphoma. And it was when I really doubled down on, I was already living healthy. I was always the plant manager who was drinking smoothies. So I was always in shape, but it wasn't necessarily intentional health-wise. And then when my friend got diagnosed with lymphoma, I doubled down on all of that. Unfortunately, he passed away.
I'm
And that
sorry.
was really, oh, thank you. That was really the genesis of Quiet the Noise. I'm an engineer by trade. So Quiet the Noise means something quite literal. It means, in life, we have a signal to noise ratio, the value versus the noise in our life. And if you can reduce the noise in your life, that's where the big opportunity is. We always talk about leveling up, but really, there's all these things holding us back that if we can focus on those, be it in physical, mental, spiritual, or emotional, it'll just help us grow.
I love that. And you said so many things. I was going to start jotting down questions, but there's so much, especially within corporate, but also really predominantly in women, but also now men are starting to talk about burnout and feeling like they're spent. And so is that sort of where it, okay, so I understand your friend. And again, my condolences and I'm sorry for the passing.
Thank you.
But I guess that's where it started. But then I feel like that's sort of like a aha moment and an eye-opener
Exactly.
for you to sort of take inventory, if you will, about your life. And so did you find that you were living that life where, because you know what, it is so hard to, whether it's a phone, computers, this, that, we're always like on and connected and whatever. Is that when you just took a step back and said, okay, this isn't for me? And then you did something personally and then turned it into a business. Like, tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, I have a tattoo on the side of my body. It's a small one. Nobody can see it except me, but it says character's fate. And really, I do believe in that quite a bit. And I guess what I would say was everything happened exactly as it should. There was no real plan or intention for this change. A lot of things, I guess, intersected at the exact same time. The disillusionment with my old career, Brad getting sick, and me, to your point, getting more exposed. and having multiple aha moments. It's really hard when you become aware of something not to change. You know, that awareness creates a vacuum. It almost begs change. So people get bogged down in action plans and everything. You know what? First, just become aware of it. And subconsciously, you're going to get drawn to those new behaviors that you want to espouse. And it's not obvious, but that's really how it happened. And it's a beautiful coalescence, because everything I'm doing, the Venn diagrams of my business, of quiet the noise, everything almost completely overlap. So it really is a new life.
I love that. And, you know, people are looking for that. I almost look at what you're doing as a movement, okay? Because mm-hmm. I think that you can be hustle bustle, you know, rocking it in all, you know, areas yeah. of your life, but you can only sustain that for so long until you do yeah. get burnt out or your body, because if you don't listen to your body and you're not aware, like you said, you're going to, something's going to happen. And yeah. whether that yeah. becomes illness, mentally, spiritually, like you said, emotionally. So I mm-hmm. think, like you said, it's listening to your body, but being aware and mindful is so incredibly important.
Yeah. It's funny you mention that, because I literally just recorded a video on the art of living, mindfulness in this age of distraction. It is quite eerie. I literally downloaded it on my computer about an hour ago.
Ooh, and maybe I've got access to your computer.
Yeah, that would be scary. But it's exactly what you talked about. And I approached mindfulness from simply noticing. Like, sometimes we make things a little too complicated, but mindfulness is really about awareness, is really about noticing. You know, when you're meditating, what are you doing? You're training yourself to notice when your mind starts to wander, when you start to have different thoughts. It's all about noticing. So when you start there, you say, I just want to notice. And then you're like, okay, well, what do I want to notice? You know, it's great that I want to notice things, but if I have no direction and no design principles for how I want to live my life, then it really doesn't matter if you're noticing. You're just doing the same things.
Exactly.
So what you mentioned regarding distraction is super important. You know, Cal Newport talks a lot about digital distraction, about managing your digital life. And digital doesn't have to be a bad thing, but our iPhone just being there is a constant source of anxiety. I don't know when I'm going to get a nuclear bomb on emails. Like, I could get a big email and it throws off my whole day. Like, having that just there is a huge source of anxiety, but we don't notice it. So the question becomes, how can you live with that and live without it? So, you know, you could do stuff like, you could have these moments, these blocks where you shut everything off, which is fair game, right? You put it on airplane mode, you get it out of sight, right? You do this for maybe 45 minutes at a time. Or you could have a 30-day declutter. And then you really have to ask yourself, are these digital devices, is what I'm using improving my level of fulfillment in life? Or is it really just noise? And that's just a mature decision we all have to make, but we have to go through the process.
I love that. And I hope, you know, there's kids, especially mine, and I call them kids, they're young men, listening, because the generations up and coming, they are glued to their phone. I remember being a few times, but one time when I called out a whole hockey team where they were all like these boys and they were 14, maybe even 13, sitting around and they're laughing, but they're not talking to each other. And they literally are like this. And so I walked up and I'm like, hey guys, what are you doing? Yeah. And they're like, talking to each other. I'm like, you have your phone in your face, put your phones down, or I'm going to make your parents take away your Xbox, and done. And they were all like,
yeah,
it's when they still listened. Right. But
yeah, just, of course,
like, I just don't get it. Cause I guess maybe we're still in a day and age and maybe I'm dating myself and I'm totally fine with that. Where
no, definitely not.
And knock on our door, on our friend's door. And that was it. And, you know, as my kids and I've got, you know, between 26 and 15, would go and knock on the door and they're like, oh, that's weird. People don't do that anymore. I'm like, why not? Right. Yeah, and I feel it takes like the social and the human aspect out of it. It is so frustrating. And that for sure is I'm sure a podcast for a whole other time. But what do you think about that with the up and coming generations glued to their devices?
Yeah, I think the biggest danger in that, besides the fact that it has physiological effects, you know, we're starting to have calcium deposits on the back of our neck because our heads are tilted forward. Yeah. So kids are starting to grow with these bones evolving in weird ways. Like, so they're very physiological things. So just the fact of looking close all day, of, you know, the eye strain, there's a lot of things we have to do to offset that. So that's one. But then when you look at distraction and you look at what they're doing, I think what it's doing is it's what we're exposed to, right? Instagram is not selecting for the best material. Instagram is selecting for you being on Instagram. So what does that mean? It means a lot of these compulsions that we don't necessarily or didn't necessarily want to feed, don't necessarily, find value in, we're drawn to them, right? So for example, if I'm exposed to this all day, I'm going to look at life more through a it's all about me lens, because on Instagram, it's all about me usually. So, okay, so it's all about me. So self-actualization, let's raise that flag. I don't care what people think, it's this whole mentality that we don't need people. And, Maslow's hierarchy of needs didn't stop at self-actualization. He went to transcendence. Transcendence was the goal. And I find, to your point, I know I'm getting a bit philosophical here, but I find, to your point, this focusing on social media and this digital distraction, which is really Instagram, let's say Instagram and TikTok are the eye of the hurricane here. That's really what it's espousing. And I think we need to really start to say, no, it is about relationships. It is about connection. And the fact that you're only focused on yourself, you're alienating yourself. And you think you're going to live life in this padded room. You're not. You're going to live life with other people. So it's very relevant what people think. It's very relevant how people see you. It doesn't mean you should feel bad about yourself, but you should pay attention and you should want to connect.
I love that. And you know what? I love the fact that you got philosophical, because I think people need to know. And it's funny, my three older ones and now this one who's 15, they basically told me, and they still to this day, I mean, it's sort of a joke, but I had got so much pushback because I never let them have Instagram and Snapchat and all that stuff. They're like, you wrecked our high school years. I'm like, okay, look, if you're going to be in therapy for something, it might as well be my mommy didn't let me have social media. I'm good with that. Like, that's a choice I was happy with. But then, they grow up and they, look at whatever. But I think it's boys and it's girls. And so we'll sort of touch base a little bit. I know that you've got a beautiful wife and you are expecting in June.
June 20th. Yeah. Yeah. So we're super excited.
And you are going to have a girl. I guess.
Yeah. Little girl. Yeah.
That's awesome. And so, I find, boys are cruel. And they're mean too. So I don't want to say that it's just a girl thing.
Sure.
But I find that with a lot of people that I work with, I also have a private investigation agency.
Yeah.
I can't tell you the amount of parents distraught with kids, young girls with mental health issues because of bullying or because of things that are being said online. And again, back in the day, you would meet somebody sort of toe-to-toe, nose-to-nose in the playground. Oh, you said this, okay. But now it's on this and it's everywhere and it is scary. And so what is your sort of take now that you've got, a beautiful little girl that will soon be a young girl? Does it scare you? Does it freak you out? Like, I know you're going to raise them with the confidence, but you can only control how you raise them. So what is your sort of take on the whole social media and the negativity?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think about it a lot. I worry about what I can't control, and there's a lot I can't control. So the only thing we can control is a conversation we have with our daughter. And my wife is extremely, extremely well experienced in this, if you want to say it that way. She was Miss Venezuela and she was in Miss Universe. So all of that notoriety, all of that really made her a target. Right? Made her a target. And she knows how to manage that. And so she'll be able to impart a lot of that wisdom. Look, I know it from a knowledge perspective. She knows it from a feeling perspective, which is really a different ball game. But as far as the knowledge perspective, where in this realm, I can add a lot of value. It's really about her knowing in the end that she is incredibly loved and she is incredibly allowed to be who she is. And if people are criticizing her for having good character, which she will, that I can assure, if she has good character and she's being teased, then that's not a bad thing. So I'm really going to shape her to be connected with everybody, but to be very self-assured that if you act in terms of how you should and you're a kind person, everything's going to turn out as it should.
And like you said, that's really all you can control. And, I love the fact that you talk about this, character building, as you will, from a young age. I've got a book that's coming out this year about confidence, but I've also written a kid's book because it doesn't start when you're 30 or 40 something. No. It starts when you're young, right? Mm-hmm. And I love the fact that as parents, you're already thinking like, I am going to instill this in them. And that is beautiful and wonderful. Unfortunately, like I said, for others, that was not the case. But I love the fact that you can bring that up and say there's things that you can do, which is have the conversations, right? I feel that a lot of times parents, you know, well, I don't really want to go there because it's not an issue. Well, no, go there. Talk about the tough stuff, right?
Yeah, 100%. You know, it's tough because it sounds like a judgment. I think every little girl could be spoken to tomorrow and assured of, regardless of your upbringing, if you act in accordance with good character, which again, I have a whole character code, so don't get me started. We developed a whole ecosystem around character. So I have 8 pillars of character. I have definitions, equations. So I spend almost all my time working on this when I'm not working on the drinks. And it really is about understanding what character is, because look, it's easy to say have good character. That's an extremely ambiguous comment. But every girl can be talked to and they can be said, look, if you're generous, if you're compassionate, if you have integrity and honesty, you know, everything that happens will happen as it should. And you can make those choices. You can make those choices. You can't control how people respond to that. And often it's the people who do have gaps in their character that are going to lash out because they see themselves and they're almost angry that you've taken a higher road. Because look, gossipers like to hang with gossipers. You know, people who are mean love to be with people who are mean. It's we attract what we are. Yeah, exactly. But so So I feel everybody can have that conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you brought up so many good points about, you know, your character. I'd love to hear what the 8 are. For me, one of the sort of pillars, I mean, I have a few different pillars, but the one is confidence. And people always think, when people think confidence, they think, oh, it's, you know, this self-assuredness and it's the way you talk, the way you walk, the way you act, dress, whatever. And for me, it's super simple. It's the belief system you have within yourself. Yeah. And it's the promises you make to yourself. And if you say, I'm going to be an empathetic, kind, loving human being, that's like, to your point, that's when everything's going to be okay. Exactly. But it, you know, it's such formative years. And I, you know, I did have a lot of bullying up until sort of grade 10. And then from 10 to 12, I had the best years in high school, but it's not an easy place to sort of be for a young person. Now, you said something, and I don't know if you mind touching on it. You said something about stuttering when you were younger. I don't see that at all. Is that something you...
I outgrew. There's a source of anxiety that I had as a kid, which I can't put my finger on. And I'm almost sure it was the source of my stuttering. We could have a long conversation about some different things I've done to uncover that and, you know, be it in all different modalities, to be honest with you. But my stuttering, it just kind of came. I don't really remember one instance of stuttering. It's super interesting, but I stuttered all the time. So it happened so often that I almost blended it into one bad memory, but I can't see any of them. Like, it's pretty eerie. It's almost like you black it out. But I got over that in my teens, actually. It was debilitating. Like, I'm not, it wasn't just, you know, it was debilitating.
Absolutely. Yeah. But like, I mean, you touched on so many important kind of points when it comes to being younger, and whether it's childhood trauma, something you know, something you don't know. I mean, I feel like back in the day, everybody had something and has something. I know for sure I fought with anxiety, and I remember telling my mom, and I love my parents, and unfortunately my mom is the only one that's there, but she was kind of like, shh, don't tell anybody, you know, they're going to lock you up. And I was like, okay. So, you know, kind of patted me on the shoulder, you know, chin up, shoulders back, away you go. And then, you know, you of course have to deal with that later in life and figure out what it was and why it was and how beautiful that we're able to do so. But I think your point and, you know, all what we're trying to do is have those really important conversations, let our kids, let our friends, let our family sort of speak to us. And I feel like you give people that space. And I think it's a really important part of what you do. Am I correct in saying that?
Yeah, no, space is a beautiful word. you know, what creates space? Pauses create space. Compassion creates space. Space is a beautiful, beautiful word. If you were to remember one thing to improve all aspects of your life, give things space. So I'm on the same track as you.
I love that. You know, Oprah said something that has stuck with me forever. And she's always about, like, if you don't know what to do, like if you are stuck and you mm-hmm. have no clue what to do, do nothing.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Sit with it. And I was always like, oh, but I've got to solve and I've got to create and I've got
yeah.
to. And then as soon as I was able to implement, like you said, that space, it was like, it will come to you and things yeah. will turn out the way they're meant to turn out.
Exactly. You know, at the end of each of my blogs, I have a blog, I'm on number 200 or 250. And after each one, it says, and when in doubt, pause, breathe, and quiet the noise. That's every blog ends with that. So it's eerie that you say that, because it's like bang in line with what I want to remember. Well,
and what you're saying too, though, is always taking a step back
yeah.
and sort of not like we are so reactive.
Exactly.
You know, like you said, you've got to return that text, that email. You've got to, you know, comment on people's yeah. posts. You've got to do whatever. It's funny you talk about tattoos. I mean, I'm completely tatted on this arm. This one's almost done. But one of my favorite ones that I have here is just breathe. And people yeah. are like, oh, that's just so not you. And I'm like, then you don't know me. Because sometimes it is just about mm-hmm. whether, you know, people talk about breath work, which I also do,
yeah.
meditation, whatever. But sometimes that's all you need to do to get the answer.
100%. There's a beautiful song by Pearl Jam called I Think It's Just Breathe. And it's actually, again, eerie circle of coincidence here. It's the song when Brad passed away. If you read the words of Just Breathe,
I just got the goosebumps.
Yeah. If you read the words of Just Breathe, it'll make you cry every time. But it's kind of that point, just breathe. Like everything is falling apart. Just breathe.
Yes.
Yeah. It makes me,
that is, I know we're coming full circle.
It makes me a bit emotional talking.
I'm
about
very, it all. Oh, that's okay.
Yeah, yeah,
how long,
yeah.
do you mind if I ask how long? Oh,
it's been over 10 years and it's a super weird thing. I could not think about Brad for a while. And then all of a sudden his picture's behind me. All of a sudden, you know, you'll just remember a moment and, you know, it's hard. I was on a global interview once and I was talking about the book and they asked about him and I just, you know, it took me a good few seconds to just get your composure again.
Oh, but that just, you know, I mean, I always knew through our wonderful friend, Brian, and, mm-hmm. you know, the few conversations we've had, you are a very kind human. And people might think, oh, okay, oh, you know, somebody's crying because, you know, 10 years. To me, it just shows, you know, your type of character as well mm-hmm. as the fact that you love. And when you love deeply. And that, yeah. again, is a beautiful thing because so many people don't have the capability to do so. So I think mm-hmm. it's beautiful. Can we see his picture? Or you, I don't want to.
Yeah, I think you see his picture. It's actually.
Oh, it's down there. Oh, okay.
It's actually right there to the right.
Oh,
it's
okay.
him and
it's
I.
It's a little bit blurred, but yeah.
yeah. It's blurred because of, sorry about that. It's blurred.
No, that's
because
okay. It just means that he's with us too. And I actually am very spiritual. So, you know, when and this is just what I've been told and sort of what I've learned, that when you get the goosebumps, which I did a few times when you kind of said, ooh, that's eerie. It means that, you know, there is presence of spirit.
Yeah.
And so I'm sure he's always with you because it sounds like a lot of what your journey is today, sort of that his whole passing mm-hmm. maybe fueled that, maybe started that. Would that be a fair comment to say?
Yeah, it is. Like things unravel in weird ways. You know what I mean? It's it was the epicenter of all the change. And trust me, like you mentioned so many things I could have went down a rabbit hole on. Change is hard when it's fundamental. And it's long when it's fundamental. Like this character conversation, it's a long conversation. It takes a lot of years. You can't just think yourself into being different. You have to start behaving different. And then eventually it'll become easier to behave the way you want. But there's a lot of work. And I went through a lot of humility, you know, it was a
yes.
lot of humility over 11 years. And you mentioned confidence. Confidence and humility are extremely tethered. You know, I see confidence as a result of having good character. When it's true confidence, it's a result of you having the belief that everything will happen as it should because you're acting in the utmost way you can. So that's where my confidence comes in. And that's exactly why Character's Fate was created. I had to believe in something. I'm Catholic by nature, but I'm quite agnostic. And when you don't feel like you have this big entity that's taking care of you all the time, well, you have to believe in something or you're going to have anxiety about everything. And that's, I believe, where the confidence comes from. And that started with Brad. And I had things, you know, man, like it's been 11-year journey and we're just really at the start of it. So it's been 11 years of unraveling.
Yeah. It sounds like, sorry. And I think there was a little bit of a delay. I thought you were done. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, it's fine.
But it sounds like you're really listening. You're paying attention. You're being curious. I'm talking about the beginning of your journey and still now, because sometimes things will happen. And I always, you know, in all my talks and anybody who will listen, I always say that things always happen for a reason. And even the really bad things always happen for a reason. Yeah. And people are always like, well, you know, there's this, you know, my husband left, my wife left, my partner left. And, you know, they took all our money. They took our kids. They took whatever. It doesn't matter what the trauma or the tragedy is. There's a bigger reason. There's a bigger purpose.
Yeah.
And a lot of times, you know, as you know, being an investigator, there's a lot of family law issues surrounding children and surrounding family and loved ones. And so people are really thinking they're searching for the truth about that person. But what I end up flipping the script on is having them find out the truth about themselves, because that's where all the answers are.
Interesting.
And you talk about humility. I love that. And you're right. That's, we could talk, I think, for hours. So we'll have to definitely set up a few podcasts. Yeah. But I feel like I've been doing this for 20 plus years. And afterwards, people will message me or write me or whatever the case may be and say, you know, you really helped me in a time that I thought I was never going to get out of. But it was the process of having everything fall apart because I wasn't listening. You know, they're like, hindsight, I knew he was cheating, she was cheating, they were hiding this, but people don't pay attention, right? And I think when you live with purpose and with intentional sort of an intentional mindset.
Yeah, intentional behavior,
You sort of, I don't want to say, look, life is full of heartache, heartbreak, bury people that we love, sadly. We lose things, we gain things, but that's life. But I think you can deal with it in a different way if you're prepared and you're grounded. What do you think?
Yeah, 100%. Look, it's hard. It's hard to find. There's a parable about a monk, and all these bad things happen to the monk. And people say, oh my God, you know, your horse is injured, blah, blah, blah. And he go, and they're like, this is a bad thing. And he goes, perhaps, you know, and it's a beautiful parable because it just reminds you that, to your point, everything that happens, look, we can't control so much, but we know that if we show up in the way we want to, that we're going to control the outcome as best we can. And look, shitty things are going to happen. There's no judgment here. You know, I'm still so far from being the Buddha. Like, my goal is to get from a 2 to a 2.2 maybe before I die. You know, this is a journey. And when tough things happen, like Marcus Aurelius, you know, he had everything bad happen to him. His wife cheated on him. He had so many people die around him. But his approach to how he internalized it was so controlled and stoic. And I think that's how we have to aspire to be and give a space for still feeling horrible and giving us that moment. But maybe, you know, maybe we'll rail on it for a half an hour. And then maybe in 2 months, it'll be 28 minutes. And then maybe in a year, it'll be 25 minutes.
But it's not sitting in it. Like, that's exactly what I always tell people too. Yeah. It's like when they call and they're crying, and I mean, we have to pick people up off the floor.
Yeah.
Rightfully so, especially when it has to do with their children. But it's sort of like you can stay in that moment. And you have to have what I call, and nothing to do with children, but let's just say infidelity, stay in that pity party, cry it out. Let's have that. And then let's put on our get well hat and let's talk about sort of the next steps. And then I feel too, you know, rejection. It's just about flipping the script on the narrative sometimes.
Yeah. The framing.
Like, I love rejection, and people are like, you're weird. And I'm like, but I renamed it to redirection. It's whatever feeling you put to, let's say, a negative word, like rejection or like no. No doesn't mean no, not ever. It means no, not me, no, not now, not today, whatever the case is. And I feel people hang on so much negativity as opposed mm-hmm. to what's the lesson, what's the message, even if yeah. it has to do with business. I mean, we've all had doors slammed in our face or said no. Yeah. We've all had, you know, being a founder, you know, I always say is one uphill battle, one uphill dirt road to, let's call it success, you know, as opposed to a paved highway. And so we're sort of used to that. But if we can take back or step back and take a look at why, you know, we were told no, if there was reasons, but just know that there's a different purpose or a greater purpose.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree with you. I love the way you approach that. It's a framing. Like the best example of how you know it's about framing is post-traumatic stress and post-traumatic growth and post-traumatic stress. You know, you can fall forward when something happens, or it can take you down. Like Pema Chodron wrote a book called When Things Fall Apart, right? It's all about that moment. What decision are you going to make? How are you going to frame it? And look, you do need a process. I have this emergency kit where you do 6 things to get you out of that acute danger space. But when you're past that, the framing is powerful. You know, if you have a sense of agency and a growth mindset, you're going to approach that very differently, because anxiety and excitement are two very similar physiological processes. A lot of the same things happen in the body. The only difference is the framing. It's either you're framing this as an anxious moment or an exciting moment, but it's the same physiological feeling in the body. The problem with anxiety is it doesn't leave. Excitement leaves.
Yeah.
So it's an unfair situation for us. But I love the way you put it, because it is all about framing. But framing is hard. Takes time. And I think we have to give ourselves space to basically just let it happen.
Absolutely. And thank you for sharing that, because, you know, you framed it perfectly, because you're saying you've got something to take you out of that moment. I don't know if you can quickly share the
yeah, sense, sure.
But I'll also include all your links in sure. The description and into your bio. But it's in that moment, excuse me, that people find things difficult. And I always say, you know, good things are difficult. You know, whether it's the easiest thing to say is having a good body, it takes a lot of work and a lot of discipline.
Yeah.
But I think discipline has to be in all aspects of your life if you want to be mentally and spiritually strong. So can you share what some of those
sure.
6 things would be?
Yeah, yeah. So look, you want to change the chemical composition of your body immediately. Because in your body right now, when you're super anxious, everything's falling apart, like really falling apart. You have a ton of cortisol. You have a ton of adrenaline, right? These things are working against you, right? So how are you going to get those things under control? Well, you're going to breathe, right? So you're going to force yourself to start with some sort of relaxing breathing where the eccentric is longer, which means blowing out. Breathing out is longer than breathing in. A million different modalities. Another one is sprint. You got to somehow, if you can sprint for 50 meters down the road, just somehow get other chemicals in your body.
Yes.
And you release so many good chemicals by sprinting, exertion. Another one is phoning a friend. We weren't meant to go through life alone. Phone a friend, get a different perspective. You're not in a right frame of mind to be making non-emotional decisions or non-emotional assumptions. So phone a friend. And then there's other ones that are more around the lines of they get more involved. Like it is all around, you know, a mantra where you just get positive programming in your mind. So those are a few, but it's all to short circuit that. Yeah.
And I love that. And, you know, I was watching Gary Brecka the other day, and I don't quote me on the exact age, but I think he said by 31, something like 90% of people never sprint again.
Wow. That's so interesting.
Talk about, I believe, you know, it. Talk about, you know, kind of eerie that I was just watching.
That's
that.
Funny.
Like, that is so funny, because there's so much sort of science around, like
a
you
ton.
Said, that interval training of sprinting and changing.
Exertion.
Yes. Yes. I love that. And exercise. And like you said, exertion is key to so much mental wellness.
Oh, it's
right?
huge. It's
and
huge.
People still, you know, fight it and say, oh, it's not going to help me. Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
It 100% is. You can never fight that, right?
Mm-hmm. It's such a game changer. Like, it really is. Resistance training, you know, the meatheads of the past kind of got it right. It was vanity driven, but muscle's good. you know, muscle's good. It helps to regulate blood glucose. It improves insulin sensitivity. It looks good. You feel good. You can take a hit. It's amazing for longevity. It is one of the most, I think it's the biggest factor in reducing all cause mortality, you know, next to smoking, is doing some sort of resistance training, building muscle. So to your point, it's super important. I find we absolve ourselves of the responsibility to do this by knocking it down and saying, well, this isn't going to yada, yada, yada. But you know what? The train's left the station. We know what it does. And it is super, super important. Forget the vanity. It's just important for longevity.
And I'm not going to lie. The vanity part of it is good too.
Yeah, it's a good byproduct.
You know, I mean, a lot of times people will comment on, you must have a lot of time. You work out at the gym so much. It's like, no, I'm up at 4. How about you? And they're like, 8. I'm like, you know, there's a whole quarter of your day or whatever of your day that you could be doing something for yourself, right? So people make excuses, but that definitely is a podcast for another time. Yeah. I've got two more quick questions before, sadly, we have to say goodbye.
Yeah, no, of course.
Because I could talk to you forever. And everything you stand for. So thank you for your amazing work.
Thank you.
I'm going to ask you a question. What do you think it means to be unbreakable?
Okay, well, that's a great segue from what we just talked about. It's the ability to take a hit. You know, resilience isn't something you can decide to have tomorrow. I don't believe that myself. I believe it is earned through experience. You know, boxers become more apt at boxing because they've taken hits, right? The more hits you take, the more you can take, right? And I believe resilience is a lagging factor. So, and I believe unbreakable is about resilience. Like, it's about that palm tree who can be in the hurricane and can bend and not break. But that palm tree has evolved in the wind. You know, it's had a lot of battles, right? When it was growing, and it learned. And I think unbreakable is that. It's not that we isolate ourselves from the world. It's the opposite. We expose ourselves to the world, but we expose ourselves to the world in a very controlled way. You know, we don't want to overexpose ourselves, but we don't want to be timid as well. So it's really playing in the boundaries of all those aspects of your life, all those things that give you meaning, family, friends, whatever it is, to lean in and to take a few punches, right? A few calculated punches. And over time, you're going to find that, wow, I didn't get rocked this time. You know, it took a 9 to get me rocked this time. That's unbreakable, you know? So anyway, that's what I see.
I love the answer. I love it. And, you know, to your point, I'm just going to go back to resilience for a moment.
Sure.
Is there are things that are going to happen. And you, like you said, you know, things are going to take your feet out from underneath you, or it's going to take a 9 until you get there.
Exactly.
But I agree, resilience not only takes time, but it also takes sort of an intent to be resilient, saying
100%.
This is really bad. This is like terrible.
100%.
But what am I going to do with it? What am I going to learn from it? What is it trying to teach me? And then also, I think it's the feeling you attach to it. Because if you go back to Brad, you have this wonderful feeling about your friend, you know, that obviously you could have hung on to how, you know, you said goodbye. But instead, you turned it all into a positive and you made it a positive and you continue to do so. So, you know what? Kudos to you. Love
Thank
that.
You. Thank you.
And so, you know, it, sort of to end things, because as I said, I've got so many
questions
about you for another podcast.
Yeah.
What would you say would be sort of your best advice to somebody that's maybe just starting off on their wellness journey? And by wellness, I don't just mean physical.
No, of course. All modalities,
spiritual, everything. What would you say to them? Because there's so much noise out there of how to do it.
Yeah. Well, besides what I talk about, right? So this is what I do every day. The information's out there, right? So I believe everybody has the requisite amount of information to make changes. So let's just say it's not the information that's lagging. It's either they're not motivated enough or there's too much friction, right? Motivation's hard. You know, motivation's hard to change tomorrow. You could get exposed to something. You could find out you have cancer. Your motivation's going to change in an instant. But let's pretend that's not happening. So how do you reduce the friction to do the good things? So I would pick the one area. I'd do an audit, a quick audit. Anybody can do it. Look at your life physically, emotionally, mentally, spiritually. Look at those sources of noise. You know what they are. they just feel that way. Just do a feeling audit of all the things. Name three things nourishing you. Name three things that are depleting you in each one of those areas. And then say, you know what? I'm going to focus on one. And I'm going to have these small nudges. And I'm just going to nudge myself into changing and just getting a little bit better there. And I'm telling you, once that flywheel starts to spin, it is a juggernaut. It's really hard to stop. So I think you just need that those initial couple of wins. You need a bit of exposure. You know, you'll always gain more knowledge later. Just do the basics, do a quick audit, and just nudge, little nudges. If you want to start working out, don't worry about working out 4 days a week. You know, start with 20 push-ups 3 days a week, whatever you're going to do. Start small. Start small, but have the personal integrity to do it. And that's the problem. If you can't even maintain that level of personal integrity for something so small, you have to dig deeper. And maybe it's not the time for you, but one day it will be the time for you. But the sooner the better, I believe, to give us more chance to evolve.
I love that. And you know, you say something so incredibly important. Because when I deal with clients that, you know, can barely get out of bed, or they're only, you know, my only ask of them is to get out of bed and to shower every day. To me, movement is movement. Mm-hmm. And you're saying it's okay if they're tiny little steps, but make that promise to yourself and love yourself enough to keep that promise to yourself, because everybody can do it. It's, it's time management, whatever you want to call it, but it's about keeping that promise to yourself. Yeah. I love that. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We appreciate everything. Great. And I can't wait till we chat again.
Yeah, that was awesome. Thanks, Adrienne. Had a great time.
Thank you. Me too.
See you later.